Okay, so we're live. Welcome back to the Magic Minds podcast. I'm Matt Bork. You're watching and listening to the Liberty's number one podcast. Yup, the Liberties. Yup, the Flats. What is the crack on the show today? I'm joined by my pal, Lily. Lily Bryant. How do you like them apples? We've been
well
practicing
done.
That.
How many years have I known you and you finally got my name right?
I looked at an hour ago, I was calling you Lily Allen.
That's
and then
true.
I was Lily Bryant.
If I was Lily Allen, I'll tell you what, I'd have a bit of cash on my.
But look, you have looks, you have a beautiful set of gnashers and you've got some beautiful assets in your life.
Yes, I do. New ones.
That's a very important, assets are very important. And like, guys, I've asked my pal Lily to come on the show because we're going to talk about a subject which is very, very sensitive, not just to women, but to men as well. Weight loss. Weight loss is perceived sometimes as just this mechanical process of just losing weight and it's all real simple, calories in versus calories out. But it's very, very complex. How do I know? Because I've went through myself and the psychological effect, the physiological effect, but also the psychosocial. And Lily has fantastically lost a lot of weight over the last year or so, a year or two, isn't it?
Yeah, 2 years, maybe a year and a half,
yeah. So we're going to talk about that process and it will, I think, will be hugely beneficial to men and women. And the pitfalls that come with it, you may think, oh, I'm losing weight and I look Gucci. But that comes at a price, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, everything comes at a price. It just depends on how much you're willing to pay.
Ah, that's it. I love that. That's it. Do you know what? I was actually talking to a pal of mine today, a girl, and we were talking outside, and it does boil down to that very same fact. How much do you want it? When you're going after a goal or a task, and like, you really have to want it, don't you, if you're going to endure the long game.
And you have to be prepared to kind of, I suppose, do what needs to be done. But I think more than weight loss, I think is really important to talk about why we gain weight and why we eat so much and what kind of psychological issues are surrounding that. Because that's a big thing. You know, people just assume if there's a fat person that they're gluttonous or they're, oh look, that person's lazy and things like that. But I just think every single person on the planet has a relationship with food. And during times of stress, turmoil, pressure, whatever issues we're having, we can use food as a tool. We can turn towards it where we just binge or we overeat or we eat to push feelings down, or we completely turn away from it and we restrict and we stop eating or we try and manage or control. It's all about control, isn't it? Control what you put in your mouth. Probably quite, I'm not going to compare because it's not a comparison, but it can be an addiction. It can be, you know, it can be quite traumatic. Food can be quite traumatic for people, I think. And I think that I'm nearly 50. I went on my first diet at 13. I was put on my first diet at 13. And I think that I've had problems with my weight ever since then. Ever since that pivotal moment in my life when I was a teenager and my parents decided that I was overweight and that I needed to lose weight. And I was just like, okay, well, let's just do, I'm 13, I'm gonna eat what you want me to eat. And I was quite heavily into sports at the time. I used to be a gymnast, I was a diver, and I broke my nose. And the doctor more or less said, don't do anything, because if you hit your nose again, it will go out of shape. So we don't wanna ruin your face. Don't do any sports. But I just kept eating and doing what I would normally do, and hence I gained a bit of weight. Now, I was not overweight, not by any means, shape or form, but my parents obviously seen that I wasn't doing the sports and decided that they would start to limit my food. From that, I've had, how old, I don't know, how many, I can't count. So from 13 to 50, how many years of psychological food?
37.
37 years. And I can't say that I'm cured, because I still feel like even today when I put these, I've never wore skinny jeans and this is my first time, and I said I just feel terribly fat in these. I don't know if I'll wear them again.
Doesn't look like that from the camera here.
So
I have, like, I think that parents, I'm not a parent, I'm a step parent, I don't have my own children, but I really wish my parents would have went about it a different way, because it was a trauma for me as a teenager in a really important time in my childhood, when I was treated unfairly, well, I think was unfairly, by my parents, who every Saturday night we'd get a McDonald's and we'd watch a really cool show in Australia called Young Talent Time. For those that don't know, Dani Minogue starred in that. She was a bigger star than Kylie. Bigger star. But anyway, so loved that show. Loved the McDonald's. Loved the camaraderie with my siblings. Three sisters, three beautiful sisters. And everyone got McDonald's and Kruskets were put in front of me. Do you know what a Kruskit is?
Biscuits.
It's a piece of cardboard that you eat that just disintegrates into your mouth with a bit of cream cheese spread on it. And that's what I was given. And I was like, why am I, what's happening here? Well, you need to lose weight. They don't need to lose weight, but you do. So I was given that. And I think what happened then was a situation where I started to secret eat because I wasn't allowed to eat the good stuff. So I started to secret eat. And that secret eating led to binging. And so I'd be all healthy in front of my parents and then I'd be like, get all the Mars bars and all the McDonald's and everything and just do that. And because I never learned to resolve those issues, I took them well into adulthood. Like, I think the last time I binged was probably 2-3 years ago. And I had counseling. I did so many. I have spent, I don't know, 70,000 euros on trying to sort my body out. I had a functional medicine doctor, Jenny Craig. You don't have her here, but she's in America, in Australia. Weight Watchers, the cabbage diet, what else, shakes, where you just eat shakes. I remember showing up to my girlfriend's house to go for a walk, and I was just on these shakes, I wasn't eating anything else, and I had two different shoes on, because my brain wasn't even functioning, because nobody can live on a shake.
Of course.
That's mental stuff.
Of course. But you can drive the Cork in the car without putting petrol in it. Oh. You know what I mean? The wheels are going to fall off and fucking subs.
Yeah.
We're mind, body and soul, but we are a machine as well, and sometimes we forget that. I mean, I think we can drive at 100 miles an hour with only like 20% of fuel in the tank.
I know, exactly. So I think that the problem with kind of being overweight and weight loss and all these magic ideas that we can do this and we can do that is if you do not solve the core of the problem with your food issues, you can keep losing more. I lost weight, I gained it. I lost weight, I gained it, because I kept going back to those same behaviors. If I got a trigger, Charlie would walk into the room and say something to me about, are you having a bar of chocolate? This is not his trigger, it's my trigger, so he didn't mean anything by it. So then for the next 6 months, every time I wanted chocolate, I'd hide. And then because I'd eat it really quickly, and then I'd say, fuck this, and you know, I'm not allowed to have this, so I'm gonna eat 10 of them. Like a crazy person, but they weren't his, that was my issue, my Achilles heel, my trigger from 35 years ago. And I was like, I need to sort this shit out. What is happening? I'm not that 13-year-old girl anymore, I'm smarter. Because I had gone to 17 nutritionists and 25 personal trainers and functional medicine, I learned so much about food just because I spent so much money on these people.
Yeah, but what you learned about it, you learned the theory, you learned the book stuff, but as you just said to yourself, there was an ingrained pattern, there was a psychological blueprint there that the intellect doesn't quite appease.
100%. So you can pretty much, you can know everything about everything, but if you can't,
I got a forced in personal training, leisure management, went on and got a degree, I got a forced in my degree, I've done more courses than Tiger Woods in nutrition and training, and I binged I was overweight, I was obese, and I lived with the shame of that. My daughter was carrying weight at the time, I was like, I have all these qualifications, but I had all the intellect here. But I didn't sort out what you were talking about really clearly is there was an underlying difficulty.
Yeah.
And there was a pattern built, and I was comfort eating and soothing and addicted to food.
Oh, 100%. And I learned to associate food with feelings of shame, you know, and like I shouldn't be eating this. Like I remember pulling up in a car and I had a punnet of strawberries on the seat next to me. And I was kind of eating the strawberries, and when a car pulled up next to me, I quickly put the strawberry down because I didn't want that person seeing me eat these strawberries. I was like, what the fuck is wrong with me?
Why strawberries?
I don't know. Maybe because they were deemed to be sweet or something. I don't know.
I thought you were going to go somewhere different with that. Like you had, yeah, no, I thought you had a Mars bar and one I had in strawberries. Or when they come along, you'd like swap the Mars bar for the strawberries. Like,
no.
Strawberries would be synonymous with healthy.
Yeah, well.
The sugar.
Yeah.
Sugar content.
Probably got to do with the sugar. I don't know. Maybe they were chocolate covered. It was a long time ago.
That's probably more plausible.
Yeah. I didn't want whoever it was in the car to see me eating. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I'm completely wrapped up in associating food and shame.
Of course.
Food and shame, food and shame, food and shame.
Okay, but isn't it great, right? Well, first of all, I want to say, when you came in, I told you that you look fantastic in your skinny jeans and your clobber. You look amazing.
Thank you.
Look deadly, you're rocking and you're rocking the gym gear and all. Fair play to you. Isn't it great that you can trace it back to the childhood piece? And, I have to say, I think your parents were trying to do the right thing.
Of course they were.
You know, they were.
They didn't know.
No, they're fucking numpties.
I mean, they didn't know. And look, it's really, really difficult, especially back in those days. And when I say that, I actually truly mean it, because it was the early 80s or something. It was a really long time ago. A lot of your listeners might not have been born by then, but, you know.
Our demographics is 40 to 55.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, so
49% female, 47% male and 2% non-binary.
Okay. So, I mean, if I was to give parents advice, I'm not qualified to do that, by the way, we should just add that in there. But as a child that's gone through this and have experienced those kind of things happen and affect my life so horribly for such a long time, I mean, I did not look in a mirror for a really, really long time because I hated how I looked.
Me too.
Hated it. Like, I used to put my makeup on in this tiny little mirror and I'd kind of just look in it because I didn't like full-length mirrors. I'd run past windows. I never tried clothes on in shops because I would be mortified in changing rooms. Like, it literally ruined a good part of my self-esteem and my adulthood. So if I could just say to parents, like, be very, very careful how you talk to your kids about food. Lead by example, go for walks, and teach them about, like, I would say healthiness. I don't have any association with bad food and good food anymore. That does not exist in my mind.
100%.
And I absolutely love that new way of me thinking. And when somebody tries to put that back into my head, I automatically say no.
There's no morality in food. There's no good or bad.
No.
It's behaviors. It's the quantities. It's not. We can't sit here and go, this is good, that's bad. Because nothing is good or bad. It just is.
Yeah.
It's how you use it or how you behave with or without it. There's no morality in food. And we hear this all the time. You know it, girls. And I've worked with girls in the National Rehab. Is this bar good? Is that bar good? Is this machine better than this machine?
Mm.
You can't answer that question. But people love that whole black and white.
I know.
And you know there's no black and white.
But even trying to disassociate and completely disconnect myself from all these words like cheap meals and clean food and dirty food and the way that I look at things now, and there'll be probably nutritionists and personal trainers that will disagree with me on the academic side of things, but for me, a calorie is a calorie. If you choose to put a Mars bar in your mouth that's 200 calories, or you choose to put a burger, like a turkey burger with vegetables and a cup of rice, and that's your 200 calories, you that's the distinction for me. It's not about, well, that's bad and that's good. That at the end of the day, I try to have balance in my life now, and there isn't even any guilt attached to food anymore. And there used to be, oh my God, I had such severe guilt in my life for eating certain foods, and I just don't do it anymore.
100%.
Every day I have whatever I want, within reason, of course, but I do track calories. People don't like it. I know that a lot of people don't like to do, oh my God, that's such hard work. But the way that I look at things now is I wouldn't drive my car without a petrol gauge in my car because I wouldn't know how much petrol was in it. So I, especially if I'm having a day where my eating is a little bit more erratic and I'm busy and I'm going to meetings and I grab this and grab that, it's important for me to track stuff. Mm. So I just stick it into my Fitness Pal, but it's only a guide. It's a reference for me so that I can see. I don't want to go back to where I was.
Do you know, also calorie counting and doing what you're doing there is also, it's called structure and it gives you order. And without order, we have disorder. So that means you become very systematic and it becomes like a structure. And it's a very stable and secure process.
Yeah.
It might seem restrictive for people and oh, it takes so much. We don't eat an awful lot of variants of food anyway. And if you track your food for a week or two, you kind of eat the same shit.
I eat the same thing all the time.
So it's just, it's a way of creating a structure and habits, behaviors that align with your desired goals. I have even refined my practice down to, I don't have breakfast, I don't have lunch, I don't have dinner, I don't have tea. I just eat.
You just eat.
I just eat in the morning and then I'm hungry again, I'll eat again. I don't call it breakfast, don't call it lunch, don't call it anything.
I think that's amazing because I think the names that we have put on these different meals were created for capitalist reasons so that they can sell you products like 100%. Breakfast products and all this kind of stuff. Like I've often been in a job that I've been in and I've brought in for breakfast, let's say, one time I had steak for breakfast. I was having steak with
fucks with people's head.
Steak, oh my god!
For breakfast.
But you know, I'm sitting. I'd gone to the gym and I'd gone straight to work, and I had steak and vegetables and all the rest of it. And I might have even put a bit of Bisto gravy on it. And they're looking at me and they're actually saying nasty things about me. And they're sitting there eating fucking croissants or Cocoa Pops. I'm like, oh my god, are you joking?
That's the fucked up
that's
that people
not
are.
Breakfast. What
that's
kind
the
of breakfast is that?
That's the paradox we live in. That's people are so fucking contradictory.
Yeah.
Like you're there trying to live your best life in a healthy practice for you.
Yeah.
And people are judging you, but yet they're eating Cocoa Pops.
Yeah.
And I go, do you realise that you're off your fucking banger?
Yeah. it's mental stuff.
You're an
it's
extremist.
Crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. So, you know, or I don't know. It's just people have these ideas in their head, like you said, about people asking you what's in certain bars or what breakfast bar. Do you know what? You're actually better off having breakfast rather than having a breakfast bar. Why don't you have a bit of bacon, some scrambled eggs, and a bit of toast? Because it's probably the same amount of calories that's in that than the bar and a hell of a lot less sugar. And you're going to have energy for longer. You're going to feel good. Your skin's going to look good. You know?
Mm.
So, yeah, I don't want to sound cliche and say I make better choices and stuff now. I just know better. I know better.
Here's the thing that I'm going to ask you this. You do. You know better now. But is your vision, is your way of seeing things more clear? Do you have more clarity? Can you see if you're going to do something, why you're going to do it? You know your drive or intention. You just said there, sometimes your day may be erratic. Sometimes your emotions, your hormones might be right. And if you do overeat one day, you have a clear idea why you're doing it. Because I know I often sit out there and I'll eat 2 or 3 cakes. And I know why I'm doing it. I'm feeling low and I'm feeling sad. But I know it won't last. And I'll be okay tomorrow, but I understand why I'm doing what I'm, I'm comforting because I feel a bit sad today. Can you relate to that?
100%. Like, I mean, I can completely relate to that. I know what's going on for me, and I know how I feel in all situations because I'm quite tuned into my own emotions. So I know why I'm doing something, and I can kind of be like, oh, you know what? I don't really need that other Magnum today. I can leave it for tomorrow, you know, or whatever I'm doing. But I mean, we all think, I don't think this anymore, but people seem to think that at the strike of midnight, I'm going to gain weight if I've gone over my calories or if I've eaten too much. That's not how your body works. So I look at calories as a bank. You can bank them. I reckon you can have a bank for a month if you want to, because it takes quite a long time to gain weight. And if you have girls that go away on holidays and come back and weigh themselves the day they come back, I'm like, are you fucking insane? Do you know how much that's going to mess with your head? Because you've been drinking, you've been eating more foods that you would normally not eat, so there's a lot of salt in there. I guarantee you get back to how you'd normally would eat, drink lots of water, weigh yourself in 2 weeks, and you'll probably be exactly the same, if not a tiny little bit over. But at the strike of midnight tonight, if I've gone over my allocated calories, I'm not going to gain a pound or anything like that. They're like, oh my god. Like, if you Fridays and Saturdays, I probably eat more than I would eat on other days of the week, because I might have a margarita after work on a Friday. On Saturday, we generally go out. I don't do cheat meals or anything like that anymore. I just have what I like. But I have more calories on those days than I would on the other days of the week. But that's what life's about. Life's about at the weekend, you go out and you have a bit more fun. During the week, you're busy, you're in your job, I'm in the gym 4 or 5 mornings a week. But yeah, I think trying to stick, that I don't stick to a strict certain amount of calories every single day. I think that I don't live my life in that kind of strictness anymore. I manage and I look at calories to ensure that I'm getting what I need. And also, I mean, getting what I need means still I have 2 servings of veg and a bit of fruit today. Yeah, because I can check. You know, and I'm like, all right, because you know, we can eat quite mindlessly as well.
100%, and that's what I was saying to you about the clarity, having the driver, what's your intention and why I'm eating. Am I fueling? Am I bored? Am I emotionally low? Am I mindless eating? And you just be honest with yourself. Yeah. Why, what is the driver behind all this? And then that never dawned on me. Why I was actually doing what I was doing, what's my intentions of eating?
Yeah.
And then I realised, comfort eating for days and weeks, and I'd blow up like a madman. Now I understand.
It's not unusual. And that's the thing I think about, because food is such a tool now. And as I was saying to you when I was at your Magic Minds market stall, is that what it's called?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, that's where we were. And I was telling you that food problems are an issue of modernity. So it's only now, well, not now, since we passed over from tribal times or whatever it was, that we have such access to food. If you think about back then, people had to fight for food. They had to go and catch their food. They had to go and farm the fields to get food. Now we have such easy access. You can just go and pick something up and you have food. So these kind of food issues that a lot of society have, were born out of these times out of access to food. And what really strikes me as really interesting with humans and our behavior is that we spend quite a lot of money on gyms, gym clothing, gym memberships, personal trainers. And we all know at this stage that the number one thing that can change your health, your life, and your body is food. It's got nothing to do with training. It's got to do with food. That's the number one thing. So I would say we should be spending a little bit more money on things like nutritional information, going to see a nutritionist. Even when I first started training, I bought 10 sessions with a personal trainer. And then I bought another 10 sessions, and then obviously I've bought even things like a Vibratron. It's things you stand on, you wobble. I don't know why I bought that for. And treadmills, all sorts of stuff, right? Now, of course, exercise can change your body composition. That's a different thing. But food and what we do with food is probably the number one thing. That's actually the number one thing that can kill you. Do you know that? The doctor said to me, I went and weighed in because I was on a whole host of medications before I lost weight. And I'd gone off all of them. And she weighed me and she said, I'm so happy that you've lost weight. She said, because there's 2 things in society that is the number one thing for death and for the poor health. One is being overweight, and the second one is smoking. And she said that's what most deaths occur from. Now, they don't lose weight. Sorry, they don't die from food. It's from heart attacks and high cholesterol and all those kind of things. Strokes,
atherosclerosis.
All of those kind of things. So food is has such a major part to play in our lives. And I just think it's so worth it if I'm not saying people can afford to go and do this, but a basic course on nutrition and, you know, what does this do in my body and how does this help me or whatever, I think is a really, really good thing to do.
Absolutely, absolutely. But with that information, we still have the driver. And here's my thing I want to touch on with the physical exercise thing, right? I worked in brain injury for 12 years, and 99.9% 90% of people that work with a brain injury, cognitive deficits, and some would have physical deficits like hemiplegia. One side is paralyzed down one side.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them that had a problem would solely focus on the physical. I need to get to my physio, I need to get this or, but wouldn't be as interested in addressing the cognitive side. That's because society is so fixated on aesthetics, how we look. What do people hear? What do people see? So when people go to the gym, they're always trying to work on and thinking it's the aesthetics. But as you and I know from going through this process, it's the psychological, it's spiritual, it's ancestral. There's more than just biceps, cross train, or does the work. There's so much more to it. It's more complex than just jumping on a rower, jumping on it under a bench. You know, and that's where people, and then we're guided by other numpties doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you have gone through the process of understanding it's a psychological, it's also educational, it's also choice, and it's social and psychosocial.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I see that's where a huge problem is for people.
I mean, that's a problem we're never going to solve, because I mean, even when we're losing weight, or you want your body to be at a certain physique or a certain amount of body fat, you don't want it to look good. Do you know what I mean? That's your driving force, is to look good. I want to feel good about myself. I want to look good in the mirror. I want to look good in clothes. So it's really difficult to then turn around and say, well, do you know what? If you get your food right, everything else will fall into place. Because exercise for me now is not about changing my body. It's about how good it makes my head feel. It's those exercise endorphins that make me leave the gym thinking, I can fucking conquer the world now. I feel amazing. And without exercise, I actually think it's like brushing my teeth now. I never ever thought I would do that. I never thought I'd feel that way about exercise. Charlie has been going to the gym since he's 16 years old. He actually had to use fake IT to get into the gym because he weren't allowed in Ireland or something. He had to stay as 18. It's actually a funny story, but anyway, we won't go into that now. But I was calling him Charlie, and the gym manager was like, his name's not Charlie. And I was like, well, I'm getting really confused, because he was still in the same gym when he met me.
Right,
and they thought his name was something else. But anyway, why did I see how I get off track there. What was I saying, Matt? I can't remember. I'm completely off track. What point was I making?
We were talking about Charlie and training.
Oh yeah,
enjoying,
so getting up every
it's like
morning.
Brushing your teeth now. It's
yeah, so he
habitually,
used to wake me up,
habitually.
And I used to fight with him, because again, it was one of those things that probably I felt like someone was trying to force me to do, like the eating, the dieting, and all this kind of stuff. So I was like a defiant little child again, and I would be like, "Yeah, I'll go to the gym," and then I'd be like, "No, I'm not going to go to the gym." Or I never thought I would be the person that would get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, bounce out of bed, down to the gym, train for an hour and a half, go home, go get breakfast and go to work, and that it would become such an integral part of my life for my mental health.
Mm-hmm.
I standing there and looking in the mirror, and now don't get me wrong, I stand there now and look in the mirror and think, oh my God, I can see my muscles. Those muscles were always there though, they just were layered with fat.
Mm.
Like they were always there. I was like, how have I got all these muscles now? Like I've been training for 12 years. Consistently, and I guess because I'm coming from where I'm coming from, the reason why I know that it's not about the exercise, it was only when I cut my calories to a certain amount that I started to see any type of result.
Absolutely. I interviewed Professor Tim Lynch from the Neurological Institution of Ireland, and we were talking about sports people, and he said a great quote to me: where the mind goes, the body flows. And I really see that with my own body composition, because my mind, I'm not always peaceful, but I have a lot of peace in my life because I've reduced a lot of mental health difficulties and stress in my life. And I'm at peace, and I think my body responds to that.
Okay.
Where my mind, you know, I've got my mind in a great place, my eating is in line with that, and my body now is a representation of that for me.
Yeah.
I was like yourself, I went to the gym, I trained hard, I fucking 4 or 5 days a week, and I didn't see the results. It was only when I started to get my mind in place, my nutrition then comes in place, and then my body flows and follows in between.
Did you feel a little bit like a hamster on a wheel?
100%.
I actually felt like a hamster on a wheel that was carrying sandbags.
Oh.
Because I was like, oh my God, I've been coming to this gym for a week. I've been getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning and I haven't even lost a single pound.
But you know what I used to always say? I'm still in the race. I'm fucking still in the race.
Really?
I used to, oh yeah, all the time I say I'm still in the race. I'm still in the race. I'm not giving up. I'm not fucking stopping. That's, I always
used to
say this. I'm still in the race.
I used to have little moments of extreme frustration.
And I had qualifications coming out of me hole.
Mm.
And I would look in the mirror and look like a feel like a bag of shit because I had huge body composition.
Yeah.
I still wouldn't take my top off in front of many people.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I'm not that comfortable with it. I still have residual effects from childhood being slagged, being fat and ginger. And
now you wouldn't take your top off?
I wouldn't.
I'd go and get up, give it an old
skin. No, I'd take my bottoms out as well, just for good measure. No, I would. It's not something I'd be super comfortable with.
Okay.
Like, and then people go, "Why you have body issues?" And I'm like, "Yeah, because I used to get bullied and
yeah.
I used to think I was fat, like boobs and."
Yeah, I'm probably a little bit the same. As in, I'm thinking about going away for the summer, and this will be the first time I've been away since I've lost weight. And do I wear it? Like, what do I wear? And do I just wear a one piece swimming suit because I've got stretch marks on my stomach? And what do I do? And the things that women, well, obviously men think the same.
But you've been tall for a woman, yeah.
Yeah, like the things that we think of, and it's. I remember a friend of mine, Siobhan O'Flaherty, saying to me, I was away on a holiday, and I love diving. I used to be a diver, as I said. And there's this big platform in Turkey and the water is just crystal clear. And I just wouldn't do it because I had to walk past all these different people who would be looking at me in a bathing suit like they gave a fuck. Now I think, what? Like, I don't care about that. So why would there other people? And Siobhan said to me, promise me that you're going to do it. Walk down. And you know what? I texted her and told her I didn't. I actually didn't do it.
Ah.
I didn't do it. But I will. I will do it because, you know, I don't even know if this has got to do with me having more confidence because I'm thinner.
Mm.
I probably have more confidence because I really give less fucks. And I'm sorry, I know some of the viewers listeners don't like swearing, but I really read that book. Oh my God, I can't remember. It's so good, I can't remember what it's called.
The Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
Oh my God. I remember saying to one of my clients, and it was a moment. We had a moment. Because he had an anxiety attack and he was at outside an interview and he called me and I was just about to go home in the office and I answered the phone and he was like panicky and all the rest of it and I just said, listen, I won't say his name, but I said, listen, I said, do you know that we are only born with a certain amount of fucks? And I said, don't use all your fucks on this. I said, do you give a fuck about this? No. Why are you allowing it to control how you feel right now? Do you want to go in? No. I said, don't go in then. I said, we really have to be careful about using up all of our fucks.
Mm, 100%.
And that's in the book.
100%.
I just
great
have
book.
To say that. It's in
Mark,
the book.
Mark
Manson.
Mark Manson,
not
yeah.
to be confused for the other guy who was a serial killer.
No, Mark Manson. I have the book.
Charles Manson.
Charles
yeah.
Manson. Yeah, great book. I like his work. He's great. I do follow him on Instagram. I like the shit
yeah,
that he does.
I do like him as well. But
he wrote a book for Will Smith.
Did he?
Yeah.
For Will, like as in a bibliography.
What's it called again?
The Art of Not Giving a Fuck, Andy. Yeah, if you, man, you do take some clips as well when you get a chance. Remember we done last week? Take some clips.
Yeah, so I think I know this is very cliche.
Mm.
And it is really interesting, though, because you do... Like, I'm like, okay, I'm going to be 50. I've lived a half a century now. I'm like a vampire almost. I've gone through a different evolution of life and learning things and different jobs and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, you know, real true freedom has to be when you give less fucks about what people think of you, because then you can be your true authentic self and you don't care what they think.
Mm.
Now, that takes... That's difficult to get to, I think, because we do care about the core people in our lives, as in what their opinions are of us. Because if we didn't care about that, then we'd have a bit of a problem.
Psychopath.
Yeah. So obviously, and it kind of can navigate us into or out of things, of decisions and things like that, because we care. Like Charlie might be like, oh, I'd prefer it if she didn't, you know, show her tits to everyone in Dublin, and then so that makes me think, well, I better not do it, you know. you know?
just in the Dublin area.
Yeah, just north the limos. Side. Just the limos, yeah.
You just can flash everyone in the limos. So that go north side with your bangers.
They don't care, yeah. Those north side is not used to the beautiful tits though, are they?
The Australian ones. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I think that I'm in exactly the right place where I need to be at this moment in time for the construction of my new self, I suppose. Brilliant. Because I can appreciate it. As I said, I don't care about people knowing that I got a breast lift. I don't care about people knowing that I got my teeth done, because I am trying to live my best life and do the best. I've been unhappy with myself for such a fucking long time. It's about time I stepped into my power, and it's about time I stepped into it. This is me, this is who I am. I'm delighted. I'm gonna live my life. If I wanna have the Mars bar over the turkey and veg, that's my choice for now.
100%.
And life has to be about bringing yourself a little bit of happiness and a little bit of balance. It can't be all friggin' broccoli and chicken breast.
Kale crisps. Who eats kale crisps?
Who even eats kale?
I wanna punch them in the face. Come here, look, it's brilliant that you're doing all that, and it's great that you have achieved that, but let's tip into something that I think is really important, because if people's going to go on this journey, whether it's a spiritual, whether it's a physical one, there's going to be barriers, there's going to be blocks, and they can be people's opinions, they can be people saying things to you, and unnice things, and kind of like really hurtful stuff, like people questioned you whether you had an eating disorder, whether you weren't well, and told you you're losing too much weight, and are you sick? And mm-hmm. Isn't that the kind of stuff
I'm
you receive?
I'm compromising my looks, and I'm not as pretty as I used to be, and I preferred you fatter. Yeah, all sorts of stuff.
What the actual fuck do people think when they think it's okay to say those things? What the fuck is wrong with people?
I you know, on my journey of losing weight and being on crazy diets and things like that, people would constantly try to derail my train. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yeah.
But trying to derail me, come in and try and give me donuts or stuff like that. And I'm like, you're just being like, I'm being so good. Don't ruin my life for me.
Send them up to the market on their Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 9:30 to 4:00. I love donuts.
But no one ever, well, except for my mum, but we won't go into that. But no one ever turned around to me when I was suffering.
Great show.
Being overweight, waddling around, stuff on my face, binge eating, and said, holy fuck, Lily, you're putting on so much weight. Is everything okay? No one said a word to me. It was perfectly fine to be fat, because maybe there's a little bit of, what's it called? Misery and company and all that jazz. But as soon as I started losing weight and people were noticing that I started losing weight, even when I've lost weight in the past, not just now, there's constant comments about losing too much weight and, oh my God, what have you done to yourself? And you're too skinny. And, you know, do you need to talk about something? Have you got an eating disorder?
That's enough weight now. Don't lose anymore. Yeah, that's enough. Don't plan on doing anymore now,
yeah,
do you?
Yeah. You don't plan on losing anymore. You don't plan on losing any more weight, do you? I'm like, well, do you know, I don't know. I can't be arsed anymore. I'm at the point, because nine out of ten of these people are not people that I'm hanging about with. They're not my friends. They're the people that you meet on the street, people from an old job, or people that are maybe neighbors that you might have passed before. I mean, I don't know how to respond anymore, because I'm just like, shut the fuck up. Like, I do not say anything to you about your hair, your face, how you dress. Oh, what happened to you? You're after putting on about 3 stone. Did you get what happened during the pandemic? Are you depressed? If I said that, I would be an absolute asshole, would I not? Would they perceive me as, oh my God, how rude is she?
Of course.
But how is it not the same the other way around? Have you got an eating disorder? Do you need to talk about something?
Maybe you have a degree in emotional intelligence. You know, you're just a decent kind person that knows and filters through your social intelligence. Maybe that's not a good thing to say to someone. Maybe that's not the most kind, compassionate, thoughtful thing to say to someone. People don't say that sometimes. They just project project their insecurities, project
their own issues with their own weight loss issues. You, stuff like that.
Your trigger to them is a reflection of their difficulties, and your reaction is theirs, you know?
Yeah.
It's their own shit. Yeah. I get that now. So that's why I don't react. I would have been like a bull.
No, I don't. I absolutely don't react. I don't actually like hurting people's feelings or saying nasty things to people. But it's frustrating because I'm like, I have had a battle with my weight since I'm 13 years old. I am winning now. I'm winning now. Don't take that trophy out of my hand because of your own insecurities and your own projecting your shit onto me. I'm winning now. Like,
isn't it great that you can see the shit now?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not a further trigger.
Yeah.
And you're not self-doubting, you're not self-questioning, go, oh, maybe they are right, and maybe, maybe they know more than I know. I'm like, no, fuck you. I've done this myself, so yeah. Surely I'm doing something right.
Yeah.
Motherfuckers.
I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm great. Don't I look amazing? Don't you think? Do you want to see me tits? What else did I do?
I'm gonna, Charlie's pimping you out. So yeah, look, if it's okay, let's have a talk about the teeth and the tits.
Yeah,
did you
sure.
get two for the price of one?
No, I didn't.
Did you get, was it the same clinic? Talk us through that process. What was the crack with that?
So I've wanted to have a breast lift since I'm about 15, probably a little bit younger. I overdeveloped as a teenager and ended up with quite large breasts. And if you're a diver wearing your school colour, a light green swimming costume, it ain't pretty. Then diving board, you know, not pretty for a young girl. And you get more, you know, when you're older, you can manage your boobs because you've got confidence. But when you're younger, it's just like, oh my God, get these boobs off me. So at first I wanted a boob reduction as a teenager. And then as I gained weight and lost weight and gained weight and lost weight, that just became saggy. And I just said, I just want to get my breast lift. And I kept saying to my sister, if I don't do this before I'm 50, I won't do it. I don't know why I had that in my head. It's like I'm going to turn 50 and all hell's going to break loose. I'm just going to go, but I don't think that's going to happen. But I think this is going to be my best years, not the best years. So I started doing the research and I just started. I'm a great little researcher. I research everything. I just find as much information. I watch podcasts. I listen to information. I try and listen to people that have done it, and what I found, especially in Ireland, am I allowed to say that? Especially in Ireland, is people don't like to talk about stuff like this at all. They're either embarrassed or they don't want people to know. Guess what? Fucking fried egg girl, I know that you had fried eggs before and you're now a double D, so I can see you've had a boob job. Give some information to some people so that the people that are going, you know, going after you, like, I want to know how you chose your surgeon, how much it cost you, how many consultations did you have, why did you choose who you chose. And so I actually created a private little group on Instagram with women that I kind of, or like-minded women that I knew would be interested. I did before and afters, and I got frustrated because, not frustrated, it's the wrong word to use, but the surgeon quite nicely covered my nipples with little flowers, not real ones, but when he used my picture, right, not that would be weird. And I said to the girls in my group that I said, I'm not going to cover my nipples with little flowers. I am going to post pictures on here au naturel so you guys can see, because my nipples were taken off and re-put back on again, what the scarring looks like, and so you guys can see everything.
Wow, that's brilliant.
So I said, I don't think that our nipples should be sexualized. They're for feeding babies, for fuck's sake. You know, when you take your shirt off, nobody covers up your nipples. So at the end of the day, I wanted to be open, honest, and completely transparent with that. And so I had consultations in Northern Ireland on Zoom because it was the pandemic, and I had consultations in Lithuania. I had consultations here, and I just turkey blew them all out of the water, all of them. I the professionalism, they were just amazing.
Brilliant. What was Charlie's reaction when you first told him you wanted to get a boob job? What did he have to say?
He knew. He's always known. He's known since I've met him.
what's his advice for?
Charlie doesn't weigh in on anything. Charlie lets me make all of my own decisions. How amazing is that? But he's like, you know what?
Smart guy. I don't want to weigh in
because I shouldn't get a say in your body. It's your body. You need to do what makes you happy.
Legend.
He said, I don't even want to say yay or nay or something because I don't want to influence your thought process because your thought process needs to be your own. You know?
Fuck me.
Yeah, phenomenal.
He owns his own shit. Oh, he's a smart cookie.
He definitely owns his own shit. I love that. Big time. So
that's so considerate, so compassionate, so on as that. That's deadly. Yeah. I'll take me out. Yeah. He's a good egg.
He's a very good egg. So when obviously I had this consultation with the top breast surgeon in Istanbul, let me tell you. I wasn't messing with my body. I wasn't gonna go to some backyard clinic. He needed to be well known. I read his bio. I know where he studied. He did his undergraduate in Beverly Hills. He's unbelievable, and he's an artist, and I was so impressed by this. Like, his office is full of art and sculptures, and he's just amazing. I just think he's amazing. Dr. Gunsel Ozturk. This is actually not an ad, by the way. I'm not getting paid for this. No, Gunsel Ozturk. He's in Istanbul. I think it's really important when you're getting any type of surgery done as well. If you're going to go to another country, go stick to the cities. Go to the big cities. This is where there's competition. So I'm not saying they're all good in the cities, but I wouldn't go to some tiny little village somewhere in bloody Turkey. That's not for me. Somebody even came to me and said to me, if you get a quote from somewhere else and you show your surgeon your quote, he'll probably give you a cheaper price. I said, I'm not looking for a cheaper price. He's a surgeon. He's doing a job. I'm looking for him to do the best job possible. And if I give him, you know, 500 euros less, he might not put me nickel back on properly. I need that to happen. So,
in case you want to milk someone.
Yeah, exactly. So, and the interesting thing is loads of people said to me, what size? Because when you do a breast lift, they have to put an implant in because they can't just pull it up and not have anything to kind of give it substance. So what size do you want? What shape are you going for? And I said, I don't know. He's a surgeon. He's going to give me some advice. I trust him. This is what he does. This is his thing. I'm going to ask him. So when I went there, I had a conversation with him, and he just said, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to lift this one up 7 centimeters because it really shouldn't be facing the floor. This one's going to lift up 6 centimeters. We're going to put a 250cc implant in there. And I originally thought if I got this teardrop implant, which is a more natural looking breast for an older person like myself. And he said, we can't do teardrop implants with a breast lift because automatically what you want to do is you want to lift and something that looks like a teardrop is going to fall back down.
Okay,
again.
Gotcha.
So he basically said to me, it's a C-cup. If we go any bigger than a C-cup, you're tiny. And I said, I really like you. I'm tiny. I love that. He said, we can't put anything bigger than that in you. He said, it will look silly. He said, this is perfect. Unless you want me to put it. And I said, no, let's do it. That was it. The next day he operated.
Brilliant.
Boom, boom, boom. Bish, bash, bosh.
Jeez. So, yeah. Done. So if you're going to get on done, go to a city. There's always thing to get me hair done. There's a place in Leitrim. You think that'd be all right?
Yeah. I think
nothing
in Limerick.
No, I'm only joking. I'm not getting the hair done. And no disrespect to anybody at Leitrim.
Or anybody that wants to get their hair done.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Go for it. Knock yourself out.
Do whatever you want. Once you're not harming other people or animals, knock yourself out if you want.
I 100% agree. Do what makes you happy. Do the research. Get as much information as you can. And I tell you what, come summer... Like, I'm having my birthday party soon, and I basically said to the dress designer, I want the lowest cut top properly, because the lowest cut dress, sorry, that you can find. I said, because I paid good money for these babies, and they're coming out.
to be like two skinheads trying to get over a wall.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's fucking brilliant.
I'm delighted with them. I'm happy I've done it. It's one of the best things I think I've ever done, was get them done.
And again, you possibly wouldn't have been ready to do this years ago. Everything is
happening the way it should be happening.
Perfect. Right? Like, and your psychological well-being, your physical, you're choosing to change your body to suit your your requirements, and that's cool. Yeah. That makes you happy.
Yeah.
And did it give you more confidence? Do you feel more confident?
To be honest with you, I don't think boobs give me confidence, because I had big boobs before, when I was probably in my 20s, and it got me into a lot of clubs, and you know what I mean, like stuff like that. Doors were open for me. You just have to zip your top down a little bit more. Seriously, when you're young, that's what you do. But now, for me, it's not even about, it's seriously not about confidence for me. And I know people do get them done. I never had small boobs. Even if you look at pictures of me before, I squashed those babies in, and that you could see them. I never had, I just had a lot of skin and nothing inside the skin.
Okay.
So it was just, and it just, they used to hang down to, like, I could literally use my nipple to get the fleece out my belly button, you know? It's like, I need, and I tell you how I feel like I'm taller, even though I know I'm not. But my torso feels longer because I don't have these big saggy boobs on me anymore, you know?
Wow.
I do feel better in clothes, but I wouldn't say confident, no. But I just like, I definitely think they look nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like my new boobs. I'm happy. Money well spent.
Deadly. Absolutely, yeah. Fantastic. So come here. I didn't think we're actually going to actually touch on the boobs today. No pun intended. I've never touched them. But the teeth as well.
So the teeth were like a last minute decision. I was going to be in Turkey anyway. And of course, I do things my way. I always do things the Lily way. So my surgery was already booked. And the teeth people generally do not do anything with you post surgery, because you have to sit in a chair for 5 days. And I have to show you a picture of me with the drains in, because it was I look like a cyborg. So when you have such serious surgery, and it's quite serious, you know, you have a drain in either side, and then they're clipped to the front, and these bottles that hang from you like generally blood and fluid and stuff come out. And then I have this big kind of hoodie on over the top of these drains. And when I spoke to the dentist, he didn't want to do it. Oh, you're gonna struggle and sitting there for 3, 4, and 5 hours like you've just had surgery. I said, listen, I'm gonna have some good painkillers, don't worry about it. I'll be good. I'm telling you, I'll be good. I convinced him. So now, I didn't actually realize what was going to happen after surgery, that I was gonna, not that I was, the anesthetic wore off, and I realized, oh my god, I'm in a world of pain. And in Turkey, they do not give you painkillers to take home. So if you're going to Turkey to have any type of surgery, get some good painkillers from your doctor here in Ireland, which is what I did, so that when I got back to my apartment and the anesthetic started to wear off, I could actually medicate, which I needed to do. Panadol, they gave me Panadol. I said, are you insane? And then I was like, oh, look, I have this Isprin. My doctor gave it to me. And I did say to my surgeon, can I take this? And he said, yes. But they won't give you, they cannot prescribe, because they don't have your history, so they can't prescribe this stuff. So anyway, I was high as a kite, sitting in the dental chair, smiling like a Cheshire cat. Easiest thing ever. They're very easy to do. It's not a big deal.
Is it veneers you got, or what way?
I got a mixture of all sorts of stuff. I've got a whole host of shit in my mouth. So, oh, that sounds weird. But anyway, so what they do is they do an X-ray. And they then give you advice based on that X-ray. So the advice they gave me, I didn't take. They wanted to take 4 of my teeth out, my front, bottom teeth. Now, I got braces done in Mead Street, and it was what they called failed orthodontic work. And I knew it myself. I knew that after I had the braces done that my bite did not align anymore. So when I was trying to chew, my jaw was clicking, I was getting a sore mouth from eating, so something was going on. I knew that I had to do something. And I needed a few crowns at the back because a couple of my teeth, I had fillings removed, black fillings removed, because I wanted the mercury taken out of my teeth. Because I thought that was probably why I was gaining weight, really, not true at all. But and had white fillings, but those teeth ended up disintegrating. So I had to have crowns. So I said, you know what, I'm going to go to the dentist while I'm in Turkey, let them have a look. But I said, listen, I'm not having 4 teeth removed. Can you come up with an alternative plan? And I remember the interpreter saying, you know, I've been working here for years and we have French people coming in and all this, and you're the first person that said, no, I'm not doing that. And I said, well, I'm asking for an alternative. I said, I'm not having four of my teeth removed. I'm just not doing it. That's crazy to me. But they said the way that she put the braces on pushed my front bottom teeth out so far that they weren't connected to the bone like they should have been. And he said, if I put crowns on them, he said, I cannot guarantee you that you're not going to walk out of here and 2 weeks later and your teeth are going to fall out, because the crown's quite a heavy tooth over the top of your own teeth. So anyway, and then I made a few more suggestions to the orthodontist. So generally they do 10 teeth at the bottom, 10 teeth at the top. So I needed an extra tooth at the top because I had a broken tooth, and I knew that was the one I wanted to get repaired. So they put 11, but I said, you can't do 10 here and 11 there because that will make them uneven. And you can't put extra on this side and not put extra on this side. So in the end, I didn't do 10 at the bottom and 10 at the top. I'd done like 25 teeth or something. But the four at the front, he didn't put crowns on, he put veneers.
Okay.
So it's just a mixture.
Brilliant. How many teeth? Were you missing any teeth?
No. Okay.
So you had all your original teeth?
I had all my own teeth. My very best friend, Dana, was a little upset with me because I rang her and told her, I didn't tell her I was doing my teeth. And she just said, oh my God, Lily, I really don't like the idea. And I understand where she was coming from. And I did tell her that. But I'm standing outside a orthodontist's office in Turkey by myself, right? And my best friend, who's in Scotland at the time, is like, oh my God, I think this is a bad idea. This is no good. I'm like, Dana, I'm doing it. I've paid for it. I just need you to get behind this. You know what I mean? Like, and I get where she was coming from, though, because she was like, you've got perfectly functional teeth and you're going to let these guys shave them down and put extra bits on them. But I said, I have wore braces for a year and a half, and my teeth actually look worse from the braces than what they did before. And when I went back to them, they said to me, we have to put the braces back on again, charge another few grand, and you're going to keep them on for 2 years this time. I was like, I'm not actually going to get the desired result from that.
And then when we strip it all back to what we just spoke about 2 minutes ago, what makes you happy and support your decision? There's no right or wrong decision. It's just a decision.
Yeah.
And you trust the person.
100%. But I suppose one of my favorite things about Dana is she always tells me the truth. Her truth.
Yeah.
But she always tells me the truth.
But she tells you what she's thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it gives me the opportunity. And sometimes, like if I've had a row or something, and I ring her, I tell her everything. I ring her and I'll say, I did this or I said this. And she'll be like, and she kind of does that. Do you think you were a little unreasonable there?
Yeah, brilliant. She's a really honest friend.
And initially, I get the knot in my stomach and all the rest of it because she's telling me I've done the wrong thing.
It aligns with what you truly know.
Yeah. And then a few seconds later, I'm like, you know what? That was unreasonable. So I like that about her. And I think that you know, I probably give her the same kind of advice. Kind of thing, and I think that we do that for each other. We keep each other on track. And I mean, like the time about the teeth. Yeah, I knew what I was doing. I was going to do it, and yeah, but she was letting me know you've got perfectly good functioning teeth.
Poor driver. What's that? She's looking out for you.
Of course, 100%. Always her driver.
That's always. We have to remind that when people are telling us what they think and what they want. What's their driver? And generally, if it's your pal and you trust their long time,
she's trying to look about you. Yeah, 100%, absolutely. So, I agree, yeah.
What's your mate's name?
Dana.
Well done, Dana.
Well done, Dana.
So look, I didn't think we were going to cover tits, teeth, and abs.
Teeth and abs. Yeah.
So hopefully, by the time you're 50, that you'll have your abs.
Rocking. 8 weeks on Saturday.
Whoop whoop! Come here. I'm blown away by your strength of character, your resilience, your resourcefulness, your attitude. It's great to see your trajectory, you know, coming from, as you said, 13 and the eating the cardboard to now being fully clear of who you truly are, and you're embracing it and you're patting yourself on the back, and it's brilliant. And I'm not going to say because you're a woman, I say any human being that has the ability, because society loves to keep you suppressed. So if you're actually congratulating yourself, you're treating yourself with tits and teeth, deadly. Yep. Knock your fucking self out. Fair play.
Thank you very much.
What's the one thing you would like after people listen to this interview to take away? What would you like them to take home? What would you like them to digest?
I think that we need to have a look at ourselves and our behaviors around food, if this is about weight loss or if it's about food issues. I think, as I said, I think everyone has a relationship with food. I'm not saying it's good, it's bad, it's indifferent, but everyone either turns towards it or away from it during times of stress or turmoil. And if we're using it as a crutch to push feelings down and stuff like that, it's just, I think you can go on a million diets. I watch it, I've been there. Like, it was always, I was going to start on Monday, I was starting again, I fucked up today, I fell off the wagon. There is no wagon. Pull your own wagon, there's no wagon. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you get into that, if you can kind of sink your teeth into that, if you can delve a little deep, excavate, you know, like do a little digging,
yeah,
and find out why, you know, even keep a diary, why, like, how did I feel when I ate that, why did I eat that, whatever, around food. And repairing your relationship with food, I think, is paramount to finding food happiness, because food makes me happy. It can't just be about nutrition. Food is enjoyable. I love eating. I love eating certain foods. Charlie said I tap my feet when I'm eating certain foods.
Like,
tap
happy
my feet.
Feet.
Happy feet.
All right, happy
I'm
feet.
I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, is that cake? Oh, I still get excited. I get excited about food because I can get excited about food now because I've cut the ties that bound me to the shame around food.
Brilliant.
There's no more of them. So, and I, like, really and truly, if people can remove those bad foods and good foods and cheat meals and all the rest of it, just eat food. Food is, it's functional.
It's just fuel.
It's fuel for your body, but it's also joy for your body. So don't lose the joy. And when you go on diets and all the rest of it, you can't have that. And you, what is your most favorite food, Matt? What's your favorite thing to eat that gives
chocolate.
You joy?
Chocolate.
Yeah.
And cake.
Yeah.
Vanilla slice. Oh, custard slice.
Cake.
No, custard slice.
Donuts.
Coffee eclairs.
Oh.
Catrons.
No.
I like catrons.
Custard slice all day long. I ate three of them last week. I just milled them. No, I ate two, and I ate two fruit slices. I do that on
the
side.
Are they little custard cakes in Aldi? Or little?
No, I've never had
custardy
them.
Ones.
No.
3 for €2.
No, I love them out of catrons. The custard slices. Oh, yum,
see, yum. For everyone that can't see him, as in Matthew, his face is lit up over thinking about these foods. Why would you want to take that away from yourself?
I wouldn't.
So, like, I'm not even going to say anything about balance, because sometimes we don't have balance. Sometimes we just want to have the fucking cake. Sometimes that's what we want. But it doesn't mean you've fallen off the wagon, or you've ruined your week, or I fucked up my diet because I had a bit of cake. You just had a bit of cake. Move on. Get over it. Don't go and punish your body in the gym because you had a bit of cake. The gym is not about punishing. Oh, I have to. If you want to think that you can run on a treadmill to get rid of a 300 calorie cake, that makes no sense to me.
100%.
So food issues, delve a bit deeper and try to remove those stigmatized views that we have about good and bad and cheating and bad food. And the only food that you should feel guilty about is if you stole it.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, but
we didn't steal it.
If you don't money and you're stroked, it's okay. I'm not going to judge it.
Okay, we won't judge you for stealing it.
Do you know
run
what?
Faster.
Thanks so much for your honesty. Thanks so much for your honesty with your vulnerabilities, your past, your behaviours. You know, because you're vulnerable, because you're honesty, people will learn from that. And, you know, they'll see themselves in you. And that's how we can inspire people. But being honest and being transparent. Like, do you know what? And like what you said, starting up that Instagram group and talking about you getting your boobs on and showing and sharing with other people the mistakes and path you chose, and in service of inspiring other people to maybe achieve the success that you have. So fair play to you. Another very important part, which we didn't highlight, which is the support you have around. Like, Charlie is an incredible strength to you. And that sometimes can be hugely important when you go on a body transformation or a career transformation, is the environment, the people that you surround yourself with,
yeah.
is a big piece.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, we have these kind of conversations all the time, but he did say something to me last week about, I don't find you more attractive. I don't love you any more than I did before. I find your confidence more attractive. I don't find you. He said, I loved you when you were overweight. I found you sexy when you were overweight. I was mad about you when you were overweight. He said, so it's your confidence and how you feel about yourself and your It's like you're coming into your own with you're being very creative with your fashion, which you probably weren't before.
Fucking
and he
brilliant.
Said, these are all the things that I'm noticing about
I'm
you.
The same.
It's not
yeah.
about your body, you know?
Love it. Fucking love it.
Sure, he loves the tips, but, you know, he's not allowed to touch them yet. In 3 months, 3 months.
Fuck you, man. Brilliant. Poor Charlie.
I know.
Charlie, you're an absolute legend. Thanks for walking me, dog, of being a legend. although it's no compensation to fucking feeling your wife's tits, but he's a good guy. He's great about walking. Just don't try milk him.
Oh my God.
don't milk me, dog. You can milk anything with nipples, apparently.
Really?
Well, that's what he said in the Meet the Fuckers.
Oh my God, you need to stop getting your life lessons from movies.
Sister, I can Meet the Fuckers. Yeah, no, I just don't know how to get the milk out of almonds because almonds don't have nipples. How do you milk an almond?
So you soak them. You didn't think I'd know that, did you? You soak them and then you take the...
It's still not milk.
You take the...
It's not milk. You don't like...
And there's nothing more tasteless
That's an agricultural. My daughter gets almond milk or almond, I'd call it goat's milk almond milk and vanilla coffee. I'm like, why would you do that?
I used to think almond milk was amazing because it was meant to be, you know, so good for you. You know the buzzes, like the buzzwords are around, oh, that's high protein, or that has lots of this or lots of that. And almond milk was this big health thing. And actually, I drank it for years. And now if I have a sip of it, I'm like, that is watered down shit. It's horrible.
Yeah, it's pointless.
It's like, I'm not into it at all.
It's like going to a prostitute and getting a hug.
Yeah, exactly.
Why would you do that? It's just pointless.
Bother?
Not that I advocate that kind of behaviour, by the way.
No.
Just my friend told me that.
Yeah, me too.
I judge him for it as well. Yeah. Don't do that, ladies and gentlemen. Kids, don't do this at home. Hugging prostitutes. Just pay them the full money.
Yeah.
Anyway, right.
Get all your money's worth.
Anyway, right, let's move on swiftly on. Tits, prostitutes, losing weight, Lily, Byron,
Brian.
See, I'm like Dory from Nemo. That's Andy. You're a legend. Fair play to
you.
Absolute inspiration. You are.
I am a legend.
You are. I love your modesty. That's what's so good about you. Thanks very much for your honesty. Guys, so there you go. If you're planning on going getting your teeth or tits done, off the torque you go. You might see fungi over there. If you're planning any weight transformation.
You can always follow me on Instagram if you like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Do you want to give your Instagram handle there for your
what
followers?
Lily Likes.
What Lily Likes.
It sounds so punsy, but I used to be all these different crazy names like Miss Fitness and all this fucking unbelievable shite. I really think that they do what I do and you can look like me. No, because we're two different people, so that's not going to happen. Anyway, I've gone off on a tangent, sidetrack here, up an alley. Don't come up the alley with me, boys and girls. But go to What Lily Likes. It's just a page of what I like. This is training, food, dancing, dogs.
Shaking your hips like a bag of
chips.
Shaking
my hips. And maybe when my boobs heal, there'll be some booby pictures.
Boob action. So there you have it. So if you want to get your tits, teat, lose some weight, Lily is the lady to be following. What Lily Likes. So come here. As always, I want to thank Andy from Liberty Media Hub. Whatever. I say Crips and it's Crisps. So there you go. Liberty's Media Hub. The People's Front Judea, the Judeans People's Front. Noel Riley from Rooney Media Graphics. The girls from Shannon's Hope Line, Lisa and Sandra. The lads from Liberty Soup Run. And also, and I'm going to say this at the end of every podcast now, the Liberty Market. If you've not been to the Liberty Market, please go there. I'm on a crusade. I want to raise the profile of the Liberty Market. I have a stall there. There was a market going on last week and I was pissed off because I wasn't avoided. I know in our CE demographics or that. So I'm going to use my energy and I'm going to channel her into, we're going to try grow the Liberty Market. It's one of the oldest, if not the oldest market in Dublin. It's amazing. I have a stall there. There's other stall holders there who are absolutely fantastic. It's rich in history. What were you saying, Andy?
Characters,
bargains, bants. It's an iconic place, you know. So I'm really going to drive it and I'm really going to promote it and we're going to try and get some cool stuff going there in the next couple of months. So that will be at the end of every podcast. So look, thanks very much to all the listeners, all the followers. Thanks for all the kind words and the messages I get. If you like the work that we do, we have a Patreon page. If you'd like to go over there and give us some money, the price of a coffee. If you don't have the money, it's $3.99. All our content on social media is free 99. Please, please share with your family and friends. And that's it. Thanks very much for your support. Thanks, Lily. Thank to you guys. You up the flats. Mind your little self.